It's time. This is February 13th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 2051 hours Eastern Standard Time. We're green with you again today, and we have today the paragraph number 5 in the section The Exodus within the inset called The Arabian Tradition in paragraph 6 of the Crucible article. Or C-cubed article, Crucible of Credible Creed, Chapter 6, the Arabian Tradition inset, the section called the Exodus. So, and then there's 1, 2, 3, 4, and we're on paragraph 5 in the Exodus section. After Walid on the Arab king list comes Deluca, who is the, quote, old woman, unquote, corresponding to Hatshepsut, a royal wife of Thutmose II, who, that is Hatshepsut, is believed to have exerted great power during his reign as successor to Thutmose I. In other words, his wife exerted great power during his own reign, which was very brief. It was perhaps about 3 years, so we can almost ignore his record in the Arabian tradition, and we don't see anyone corresponding to him in the Arabian tradition. Indeed, we see immediately following Walid, who drowned in the Red Sea, we see this old woman, who appears to be the daughter of Thutmose I, of course, because Thutmose I had a daughter, and his son Thutmose II succeeded him, but his daughter was the wife of Thutmose II, and the Egyptians did marry siblings, got married, and she also ruled later, after her husband died, after his brief reign, that is Thutmose II. She reigned later during the reign of Thutmose III, who was quite young at the time when his father died. So she took the throne in place of the young boy after her husband died, and she was one of the great Egyptian builders. This is really significant. And that explains how Deluca was said to have built the pyramids, which we know she didn't do, or we're fairly certain she didn't build the pyramids, but she was a great builder, so that fits in the tradition of the Arabs. And Deluca was said to have been an expert in magic. And while she was said to have lived 100 years, Hatshepsut lived for about 50 years, we believe, although she accomplished much. She did accomplish a great deal. But also, her father was quite elderly, or he was, we believe he was quite an older king when he was a military leader for the time of Amenhotep I, who preceded him. So he could have been 50 years old by the time he took the throne. He could have been in his 60s, or even maybe even older. Yeah, he could have been even older when he was drowned in the Red Sea. So his daughter could have been 40 or maybe even 50 years old when she took the throne. And she ruled for 21 years, according to Manetho, Amersis. The three different versions of Manetho only mention her in two of them, Amersis and Amesis, 22 and 21 years respectively, 21 years 9 months being Josephus, his record, but Julius Africanus says 13 or 22 years for her. Now, in this account, Mefres comes after her, which we know is backwards, but that's a relatively minor difficulty considering all the other difficulties in the scrambled history of Egypt, or the rags and tatters, as one famous archaeologist put it. But Deluca means humble one, and Hatshepsut means foremost of noble women. But because there have been exceedingly rare examples of female pharaohs, this is agreement sufficient. It's very good agreement, is it not, that an old woman succeeds the Pharaoh of the Exodus, and we have this very rare female Pharaoh who very soon after the death of her father succeeds her own husband and becomes Pharaoh. And so it's a perfect fit, and it confirms apparently the actual identity of the Pharaoh of the Exodus as being Thutmose the First. So it's remarkable, is it not? Proverbs 14, little children, is today's proverb, 14 and 19. Bad people will have to bow down before the good ones, and the wicked people at the gates of the righteous one. That's what it says. That's not what we don't, I mean, that's what the proverb says. We don't see that teaching necessarily in the world around us. People don't necessarily believe that, but it's very instructive if we see that that's what apparently Jehovah thinks. Bad people will have to bow down before the good ones, and the wicked people at the gates of the righteous one. It says there is an advantage to being a good person or a righteous person. That's what that scripture, that proverb says. There are advantages to being righteous, according to that. It's not all negative, which some people would have us believe, because they, and even all of us, are oftentimes, we're not happy when we have to suffer. And sometimes righteous people have to suffer because they want to do what's right. And yet, there is an advantage to being righteous according to that. First Chronicles chapter 3, we have a very interesting and fairly short chapter. From First Chronicles chapter 3. Now, the author of First Chronicles, we believe, was Ezra. And although other people, I believe, according to Adam Clark, other people would have had a hand in the writing of Chronicles. Many other writers, of course, you know, historians, prophets who kept the records of the kings of and the genealogies, those who kept the records of the genealogies, because this book, First Chronicles, has a lot of genealogies contained in it, as we've already seen. It's the work of Ezra, according to what Jews and Christians believe, assisted by the prophets Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. So, chiefly it was written by Ezra. Now, chapter 3, and these became the sons of David that were born to him in Hebron. The first Amnon of Ahinoam, the Jezreelites, the second Daniel, second son of David, of Abigail, the Carmelites, the third Absalom, the son of Maacah, the daughter of Talmai, the king of Geshur, the fourth Adonijah, the son of Haggith, the fifth Shephatiah of Abital, the sixth Ithream of Eglah, his wife. There were six born to him in Hebron, and he continued to reign there 7 years and 6 months. And for 33 years he reigned in Jerusalem. This is King David. We see that one of his wives was the daughter of a king, but also we see his chronology, that is the chronology of his rulership, was 7.5 plus 33, which is 40.5 years in total, 33 of which were in Jerusalem. And there were these born to him in Jerusalem: Shimeah and Shobab and Nathan and Solomon, four of Bathsheba, the daughter of Amiel, and Ibhar and Elishama and Eliphelet and Noga and Nepheg and Japhia and Elishama and Eliada and Eliphelet, nine. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. all the sons of David besides the sons of the concubines. So evidently he had other sons by his concubines. And a concubine is a secondary wife with less than full stature as a wife. And Tamar, their sister, also was born to David. And the son of Solomon was, this is one of David's sons, Solomon, whom we know as King Solomon. The son of Solomon was Rehoboam. He was a king. So this is the kingly line. Abijah his son, Asa his son, Jehoshaphat his son, Jehoram his son, Ahaziah his son, Jehoash his son, Amaziah his son, Azariah, who is also called Uzziah, his son, Jotham his son, Ahaz his son, Hezekiah his son, Manasseh his son, Amon his son, Josiah his son. Josiah was the last king who ruled under Jehovah's sovereignty alone before the Egyptians killed Josiah. And the sons of Josiah were the firstborn, Johanan, which is also in the footnote in one of the, in the LaGuardian edition of the Septuagint, it says his name is Joahaz. Jehoahaz is the name that we know him by. Jehoahaz. You see there the LaGuardian edition of the Septuagint says Joahaz. Or Johanan in the Masoretic text, the Greek Septuagint generally, and the Syriac Peshitta version, Latin Vulgate, they all have Johanan. But we know him as Jehoahaz. And that was his firstborn, Josiah's firstborn. That's why he took the kingship first on the death of Josiah for 3 months. And then the second son of Josiah was Jehoiakim, who ruled for 11 years or 10 years some months. He was the second son. And his name had been changed to Jehoiakim by the Egyptians to Eliakim. From Eliakim to Jehoiakim. The third son was Zedekiah. His name was Mattaniah or something like that. And his name was changed to Zedekiah, but he was the third son. And he succeeded Jehoiakim for 10 years and some months. And the fourth son who didn't become king was Shalom, because the last king who died in BCE 587 was Zedekiah. And Shalom was the fourth son who didn't get the kingship. And the sons of Jehoiakim were Jeconiah. The sons of Jehoiakim were Jeconiah, whom we also know as Jehoiakim, with an N at the end. And he had a son named Zedekiah, who also didn't rule as king, but Jeconiah ruled as king, because Zedekiah really succeeded Jehoiakim, who succeeded Jehoiakim for 3 months. So Zedekiah didn't directly succeed Jehoiakim. But Jeconiah was the son of Jehoiakim, who ruled in between the two. And Jeconiah had a son named Zedekiah, it just so happens, in verse 16. And the sons of Jeconiah as prisoner, he was taken to Babylon. Jeconiah, Jehoiakim, he was released in the 37th year of the exile, as we read earlier. His sons, when he was a prisoner in Babylon, were Shealtiel, his son, that is, and Melchiram, and Padiah, and Shenazar, Jechemiah, Hashema, and Nedabiah. And the sons of Padiah were Zerubbabel and Shimei, however we want to pronounce it. But these, we know Zerubbabel was involved in coming back from Babylon after the exile was over, which is 50 years, roughly 50 years, right, after the exile began. And they came back in about 537 BCE with Zerubbabel in charge of some of the leadership, you know, as the governor. And Shimei is another way to pronounce that. And the sons of Zerubbabel were, the sons of Zerubbabel were Meshullam and Hananiah, and Shalomith was their sister, and Hashuba and Ohel and Berechiah and Hasadiah, Jushab, he said, five. See, there are five given after the first two sons of Zerubbabel, so there appear to be seven there. and the sons of Hananiah were, Meshullam, okay, was the first son of Zerubbabel, and Hananiah was the second. So these sons here could be the five sons of the first son, Meshullam, Heshubah, and Ohel, and Berechiah, and Hasadiah. Jushab, he said, those five could be the sons of the first son of Zerubbabel, whose name was Meshullam, and then the sons of Hananiah, the second son of Zerubbabel. The sons of Hananiah, the second son of Zerubbabel, verse 21, were Pelatiah and Jeshiah, the sons of Jeshiah, Rephaiah, the sons of Rephaiah, Arnan, the sons of Arnan, Obadiah, the sons of Obadiah, Shechaniah, the sons of Shechaniah, Shemaiah, and the sons of Shemaiah, Hattush, and Igal, and Beriah, and Neariah, and Shaphat. 6. And the sons of Neariah were Elioenai, and Hizkiah, and Azricam. 3. And the sons of Elioenai were Hodaviah, and Eliashib, and Peleah. It could be Peleah, but I think it also could be Peleah. And Akub, and Johanan, and Deleah, and Anani. 7. So there we have some of the descendants there. These are all descendants of Solomon, of course. It's fascinating. And some of them were, of course, sons of the last king of Judah. The last autonomous king, the one who ruled under Jehovah alone. The last God-given king, we should say, maybe. With divine right of kingship, if that's the right term. It was a term that later was used in our history, in more modern times, the divine right of kings, but it might be also applicable to refer to the kings who ruled under Jehovah's sovereignty and didn't have any vassalship to any other nation, such as the subsequent kings did. And there weren't many of the subsequent kings either. There were only Jehoahaz, Jehoiakim, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah, 4 kings, and that was the end of the kingship. But these descendants, many of them are descendants of Josiah, who was the last sovereign king of Israel. Fascinating. And he died in 609, according to Daniel Kahn, and according to our own chronology also. 609 BCE was the death of the year of the death of King Josiah, the last sovereign king of Israel. Can we now read Daniel chapter 4? We have some time. I hope we do. Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all the peoples, national groups, and languages that are dwelling in all the earth, Daniel writes in chapter 4, may your peace grow great, Nebuchadnezzar wrote or said. The signs and wonders that the Most High God has performed with me, it has seemed good to me to declare. So Nebuchadnezzar, in verse 2, acknowledges the Most High God. Verse 3, how grand his signs are, and how mighty his wonders are. His kingdom is a kingdom to time indefinite, and his rulership is for generation after generation. So Nebuchadnezzar really does give a lot of credit to Jehovah. Verse 4, I, Nebuchadnezzar, happened to be at ease in my house and flourishing in my palace. Now, these are the things here that this first 3 verses was probably written after Nebuchadnezzar began to believe. It undoubtedly was, because that it shows that he believes in God at that point. But in this story, he did not believe initially in God. And so verse 4, this is the beginning of the story, little ones. I, Nebuchadnezzar, happened to be at ease in my house. You ready for this story? And flourishing in my palace. There was a dream that I beheld, and it began to make me afraid. and there were mental images upon my bed and visions of my head that began to frighten me. And from me an order was being put through to bring in before me all the wise men of Babylon, that they might make known to me the very interpretation of the dream. At that time, the magic practicing priests, the conjurers, the Chaldeans, and the astrologers were entering, and I was saying before them what the dream was. So this time he revealed his dream. Last time, his other dream, he didn't reveal it to them. But I was saying before them what the dream was, he says. So he was telling them this time the dream, telling them. But its interpretation, they were not making known to me. That was the same as last time. They couldn't tell him either, neither the dream nor the interpretation last time. And at last, even though he told them the dream, this time they couldn't give the interpretation. Verse 8, and at last there came in before me Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God. His God was the god Bel, evidently. And in whom there is Daniel, in whom there is the spirit of the holy gods. And before him I said what the dream was. Verse 9, O Belteshazzar, the chief of the magic practicing... Daniel had already been appointed as the chief of the magic practicing priests by Nebuchadnezzar. So Nebuchadnezzar said, O Belteshazzar, the chief of the magic practicing priests, because I myself well know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and that there is no secret at all that is troubling you, tell me the visions of my dream that I have beheld, and its interpretation. Now, that was the end of verse 9. Now, when he says there's no secret at all that is troubling you, he's not talking about Daniel's secrets. He's talking about Daniel's ability to reveal secrets, right? Or through his faith in Jehovah, to be able to reveal secrets. Now, verse 10. Now, the visions of my head... Upon my bed, Nebuchadnezzar continues, I happened to be beholding, and look, a tree in the midst of the earth, the height of which was immense. The tree grew up and became strong, and its very height finally reached the heavens, and it was visible to the extremity of the whole earth. Its foliage was fair, and its fruit was abundant, and there was fruit for all on it. Under it the beast of the field would seek shade, and on its boughs the birds of the heavens would dwell, and from it all flesh would feed itself. I continued beholding in the visions of my head upon my bed, and look, a watcher, even a holy one, coming down from the heavens themselves. He was calling out loudly, and this is what he was saying, chop the tree down and cut off its boughs, shake off its foliage and scatter its fruitage. Let the beast flee from under it and the birds from its boughs. However, leave its rootstock itself in the earth, even with a banding of iron and of copper among the grass of the field. And with the dew of the heavens, let it be wet, and with the beast, let its portion be among the vegetation of the earth. Let its heart be changed from that of mankind, and let the heart of a beast be given to it, and let seven times pass over it. There's the seven times, which is also the seven times of the Gentiles in the interpretation of that particular prophecy, until the times of the Gentiles have been fulfilled. It says in the Gospels, let seven times pass over the stump of this tree. By the decree of watchers, the thing is, and by the saying of the holy ones, the request is, to the intent that people living may know that the Most High is ruler in the kingdom of mankind, and that to the one whom he wants to, he gives it, and he sets up over it even the lowliest one of mankind. So this, it's interesting that the tree's heart was that of mankind in verse 16. It was just a tree, wasn't it? How did it have the heart of mankind? So it's obviously a symbol for a man. And then verse 18, this was the dream that I myself, King Nebuchadnezzar, beheld. And you yourself, O Belteshazzar, say what the interpretation is. For as much as all the other wise men of my kingdom are unable to make known to me the interpretation itself, but you are competent, because the spirit of holy gods is in you. At that time, Daniel himself, whose name was Belteshazzar, was astonished for a moment, and his very thoughts began to frighten him. The king was answering and saying, O Belteshazzar, do not let the dream and the interpretation themselves frighten you. Belteshazzar was answering and saying, O my lord, may the dream apply to those hating you and its interpretation to your adversaries. The tree that you beheld, that grew great and became strong, and the height of which finally reached the heavens, and which was visible to all the earth, and the foliage of which was fair, and the fruit of which was abundant, and on which there was food for all, under which the beasts of the field would dwell, and on the boughs of which the birds of the heavens would reside, it is you, O king, because you have grown great and become strong, and your grandeur has grown great and reached to the heavens, and your rulership to the extremity of the earth. And because the king beheld a watcher, even a holy one, coming down from the heavens, who was also saying, chop the tree down and ruin it. This is Daniel continuing his interpretation. However, leave its rootstock itself in the earth, but with a banding of iron and of copper among the grass of the field, and with the dew of the heavens, let it become wet, and with the beasts of the field let its portion be, until seven times themselves pass over it. This is the interpretation, O king, and the decree of the Most High is that which must befall my lord the king. And you they will be driving away from men, and with the beasts of the field your dwelling will come to be, and the vegetation is what they will give even to you to eat, just like bulls. And with the dew of the heavens you yourself will be getting wet, and seven times themselves will pass over you, until you know that the Most High is ruler in the kingdom of mankind, and that to the one whom he wants to, he gives it. And this is what, of course, we saw in the first few verses of this chapter, where Nebuchadnezzar talks about the Most High God. He did, at some point, come to know that the Most High was the ruler in the kingdom of mankind, just as Daniel said here, and that to the one whom he wants to, he gives it. Daniel continues, and because they said to leave the rootstock of the tree, your kingdom will be sure to you after you know that the heavens are ruling. Therefore, O king, may my counsel seem good to you, and remove your own sins by righteousness, and your iniquity by showing mercy to the poor ones. And Daniel concluded, maybe there will occur a lengthening of your prosperity. All this, verse 28, befell Nebuchadnezzar the king. At the end of 12 lunar months, he happened to be walking upon the royal palace of Babylon. The king was answering and saying, is not this Babylon the Great that I myself have built for the royal house with the strength of my might and for the dignity of my majesty? While the word was yet in the king's mouth, there was a voice that fell from the heavens. To you it is being said, O Nebuchadnezzar the king, the kingdom itself has gone away from you, and from mankind they are driving even you away, and with the wild beasts of the field your dwelling will be. Vegetation they will give even to you to eat just like bulls, and seven times themselves will pass over you, until you know that the Most High is ruler in the kingdom of mankind. Seven times will pass over you, and that to the one whom he wants to, he gives it. At that moment the word itself was fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar, and from mankind he was being driven away, and vegetation he began to eat just like bulls. And with the dew of the heavens his own body got to be wet, until his very hair grew long, just like eagle's feathers, and his nails like bird's claws. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, he resumes his first-person account, lifted up to the heavens my eyes, and my own understanding began to return to me, and I blessed the Most High himself, and the one living to time indefinite I praised and glorified, because his rulership is a rulership to time indefinite, and his kingdom is for generation after generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are being considered as merely nothing. And he is doing according to his own will among the army of the heavens and the inhabitants of the earth. And there exists no one that can check his hand or that can say to him, what have you been doing? At the same time, my understanding itself began to return to me. and for the dignity of my kingdom, my majesty and my brightness themselves began to return to me. And for me, even my high royal officers and my grandees began eagerly searching. And I was reestablished upon my own kingdom, and greatness extraordinary was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, am praising and exalting and glorifying the King of the heavens, because all his works are truth and his ways are justice, and because those who are walking in pride, he is able to humiliate. That's the end of Daniel chapter 4. But we also know this is prophetic regarding the seven times of the Gentiles, which are decipherable, or we can calculate the length of the time from the book of Revelation also, where it talks about how many days was making up the 3.5 times. And therefore, we were able to figure out, when we apply the prophetic rule, one day for a year, we were able to get a total of 7 times equaling 2,520 years, the times of the Gentiles. Now that's all for Daniel chapter 4. That's all for our study. And the video's over too, pretty well. Only got a very short time. There's some interesting comments made by Adam Clark regarding the book of Daniel too. So apparently for 7 years, Nebuchadnezzar, in that case it was 7 years, but in the bigger, grander prophecy, the seven times became 2,520 years for the times of the Gentiles, but the 7 years applied to Nebuchadnezzar, so apparently he lost his rulership for 7 years. There's no record of that we know of, other than here, but here is the record of it. We have a record that Nebuchadnezzar lost his kingship, but we also know that he became a believer in the Most High God. Isn't that remarkable and important? Seems to be very important. Nebuchadnezzar became a believer in Jehovah, the Most High God. As indicated by the first 3 verses, he says in verse 3, how grand his signs are and how mighty his wonders are, referring to Jehovah himself, the Most High God, in verse 2. And this was written by Nebuchadnezzar and transcribed by Daniel, or it was pronounced by Nebuchadnezzar in a public address and transcribed by Daniel in chapter 4 of Daniel. So that's it for our study. It's February 13th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 21:24 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. I love you. This is time now to say goodbye for today. It's been wonderful to be with you. In my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.